Hello, and welcome to Istvos Conversations. Today we have with us the writer and translator, Christopher Moncrief, who has just been working on the novel by Mircea Eliade, entitled Diary of a Short-Sighted Adolescent. Christopher is going to talk a little bit today about the work of Mircea Eliade and Romanian literature and even Balkan literature in general. So welcome, Christopher.
Very good to be here.
To start off with, perhaps you can tell us a little bit about how it was for you to work on this novel and give us a little bit about the background and the themes in the book.
Yeah, well, I think one of the most interesting things about the book is the fact that it wasn't actually published until after Mircea Eliade died, and it was found in an attic in Bucharest, by whom nobody seems to know. But it was published after his death by his wife. So what you immediately have a book is that the author that never saw the light of day in the author's lifetime, and yet it's describing a very seminal experience in his life, because it's clearly describing his life at school, when at the time he decides he wants to become a writer, or he makes the conscious decision to start writing, and he starts going to getting short stories published by newspapers and literary reviews. So that's a very interesting thing. So you think, well, what would Eliade be saying if he saw this in print now? Because he never. I think perhaps it was serialized in a magazine, mm-hmm. but it for some reason it just got he just put it in a drawer or in a box.
It
was never actually published.
Yes.
So what would he have wanted to do with it? Are we seeing the text that he was happy with, or did he put it away in a drawer because he wasn't happy with it?
Indeed.
So that's the first thing. But it's a rite of passage novel, and these are always very interesting because
indeed.
You know you're seeing the transition of somebody from adolescence to adulthood, with all the various issues that raises. It's also quite funny, but one of the things I did notice about it that Romania doesn't seem to have changed a whole lot. Young Romanian people don't seem to have changed a whole lot since then, because you hear the humour comes out. But then again, you know, schoolboys are pretty much the same the world over.
Yes, that's true.
I think.
Yes, that's interesting. obviously, we hope it will appeal to the younger audience as well, because but there are themes in the book that you know carry through into Eliade's future career, as it were, as a philosopher of religion as well as an author, and that's so that's interesting to see the germ of those ideas.
Yes. Well, the whole idea of nostalgia and exile comes up quite quickly in the book, because he's sitting on a park bench one day, and somebody comes and sits next to him,
mm-hmm.
and this young man who is Jewish seems to have sort of wandered around the world doing all sorts of odd jobs. He's worked on tramp steamers, he's worked in Alexandria and Cairo, and I think it transpires that he's been living off the earnings of a prostitute. That's because Eliade, the young man in the book, is trying to work out what does he live off, and this chap he's talking to on the bench is always talking about women, but it's clear that he's not married, or he's not engaged, or he doesn't seem to have a stable relationship, and all that. And so the young protagonist in the novel is wise enough to know that there's something strange about, you know, there are all these women being mentioned, but it's never pinned down exactly. And at that point he starts to become interested in, perhaps, well, he's so frustrated living at home, you know, he doesn't do well at school,
mm-hmm.
He doesn't make friends easily, he doesn't make friends with girls very easily.
So he envies the traveller.
And then this man tells him how you would go about it, and you would have to go and get yourself a Russian passport, and get some money, and take some. And then he starts saying things like, well, you need to steal some of your mother's jewellery, so you could sell it later. And at that point, you know, the hero of the book starts thinking, oh, right.
Maybe not.
maybe I won't take this advice. You know,
yes.
But anyway, then this young Jew just says to him, well, you know, you. you'll never do this anyway. You're too much of a bourgeois, you know. You're stuck mm-hmm. in your home, and you've got your comfortable little attic where you write, and then you've got your parents, and then you're looked after, and you've got your friends at school. So you'll never do this.
Right. Yeah.
And he's quite offended by that.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's reached a point where he's got so frustrated by living at home, he's just about to sort of, you know, pack his bag and leave in the middle of the night. But I think probably luckily the attitude of the person he's talking to dissuades him from that.
Ah, right. Yeah, because in fact, Micheliade, the person, the man, did actually go as a young man to India.
Oh yes,
right?
He was
a long way
about,
to go in
those
days.
About 10
yes.
or 15 years. I think that is, and again, that the religious influences, of which there are many in Diary of a Short-Sighted Adolescent, they're all mixed in with Eliade was brought up in an Orthodox family, and the majority of the people in Romania are Orthodox, and it's a religion that has really taken root there. But you can tell when he starts talking, his erotic sensibility, which is of course something that comes out in Hinduism. You hear that coming out in the novel. So he was obviously at quite a young age interested in Oriental religions.
Ah.
Orthodox Christianity itself is quite Oriental.
It's already East, and then
But he wants to go that. Yes, and quite a number of his books, he wrote apart from his religious philosophy books, he's written many. At least two novels. There's one that in English is called Bengali Nights, and then there's another one which I think would be translated as Isabel and the Devil's Waters. I don't know whether it's available in English, but that is set in India, so in Delhi, I think.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure, but and interesting from an English reader's point of view, though, the milieu is an English one. Because
for the colonial.
Because
wife.
He's
yes.
mixing with a lot of people in the colonial service.
Yes.
So I mean, that was not a book I enjoyed particularly, but it'd probably be interesting for a lot of English readers to see the Indian
a
angle.
Whole new angle.
But that
yes.
was a major influence in his life, India. And then he went back to he taught at the University of Bucharest for a while, and then he went to Paris.
Uh-huh.
And I think he also spent some time in Berlin, and then of course he went to America. And
yes.
he spent the last 20-odd years of his life...
At the University of Chicago.
At the University of Chicago.
Yes,
so
yes.
He's much traveled. And I think one of the things that... we were saying earlier, one of the things that appeals to Romanians now about Eliade is he evokes Bucharest so well.
Mm-hmm.
And for many of them, it's at a time in between the wars, which most of them, of course, now don't remember. And those who do remember him are quite old. But he's the background to his books is a Romania that doesn't really exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This was after the First World War and before the Second World War. Then there was the Second World War. Then of course communism. But I think Eliade was actually part of an extreme right wing group. Was it the Iron Guard?
Yes, he did have some.
He had some connections, and that of course has made him very unpopular.
Yes.
With the left wing.
Yes, I think that was
Romania.
Brought out in America as
yes,
well,
exactly,
wasn't he? When
exactly,
he went there, yes.
exactly, and yes. so he, it caused him trouble. How much he was involved?
He
with
lived
that,
in the
it?
Shadow of that little
yes,
bit. Yes,
yeah.
indeed. But I'm very interested in this idea of nostalgia because it's a kind of a pan-Balkan.
Oh, yes.
Phenomenon,
yeah.
And also, you know, when you said that it's a Bucharest that doesn't exist anymore, that doesn't really matter in a way,
no.
does it? Because this nostalgia is really for something. I mean, you get it to a certain extent, this Yugo nostalgia
yes.
for people from ex-Yugoslavia,
yeah.
For a country that doesn't exist anymore
yeah.
as well. And did it ever exist as it does
well,
in
you,
their
you
minds?
You wonder, but,
yeah.
actually, but actually, if you go to Bucharest now, and it's a beautiful city, but it is in a terrible state still, and it's being renovated at a frantic pace, but if you wander around some of the districts, you know, and I always sort of wander around on foot everywhere I go, you know, walk for hours into the night, you do actually come across the sort of places that Eliade describes.
Right.
And of course they're old and dilapidated, but actually
that adds to it
because
yes.
of course they are probably and these buildings haven't been changed.
Yes.
He may well have walked past them.
Yes, it's a great charm in
that
isn't
that's,
there?
That's
yes.
right. You know, but
yes.
it's So that, as you said, the nostalgia is very much a Balkan thing. But I think talking about Balkan literature in general, it's a very intricate and detailed perspective. But at the same time, it's quite broad. And I think, the Balkans is a very misunderstood region. It's very easy to romanticise the Balkans.
Indeed, yes.
And you only have to go there and look at it carefully to see that you should not be, you know, romanticised by it, because some of it is extremely bleak. But I think it's a region that the West clearly does not understand.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And that's you can see that over the years, and most recently with the conflicts in the former Yugoslavia, because people don't understand. You need to have a knowledge of Islam, Judaism, Orthodox Christianity,
mm-hmm.
because those are the three amongst many, but those are the three main elements that have influenced the Balkans,
and
they're constantly Catholicism on the Western border, but
yes.
they're all constantly mingling.
That's right, yes.
And those various empires have held sway at different times.
Mm.
For instance, if you read Ivo Andrić's book,
yes.
The Bridge on the Drina, I mean, that really sums it up.
Yes, because that takes a wide sweep of history.
That takes a wide sweep of history, and it's summed up by this bridge. And the whole of the Balkans is in fact a bridge.
It's a bridge
between lots of cultures. And if you think about the terrible things that happen on that bridge, I mean, someone gets impaled, and people,
yes.
you know, and people meet their lovers, and you know,
yes.
and I think the Austro-Hungarian army marches across it at one point. They're one of the armies that march across it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's an outpost at each end, and there are sort of sentry posts along it. But that,
yes,
that
could, armies going east and some going west.
I think sometimes the bridge starts to collapse, isn't it? But As the region itself nearly has done many times.
Yes, I like that. The Balkans is a bridge.
The Balkans is a bridge. But it's paradoxically, for a region where a lot happens, it seems to happen all the time, it produces a lot of literature.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, in countries where there's a lot going on, for instance, Israel doesn't produce, and Palestine don't produce a great deal of literature, because there's so much going on. I mean, there's an awful lot of very interesting non-fiction stuff that comes out
yes.
of it. But it doesn't seem, I mean, whereas Britain, the United States and France, where nothing is happening, basically. Well, because society is very settled, you might think there's nothing happening, you know, but you know, we are not permanently at war with our neighbours.
That's right,
produces masses of literature,
mm-hmm.
And it's often said, well, because they've got nothing else better to do than to write fiction.
They need time for reflection, perhaps? I mean, the Balkans, they have waves, don't they?
Yes.
So they have waves of unrest and waves of time for reflection and writing.
Yes. And of course, as you know yourself, a mass of literature has come from the Balkans since the 1990s.
And
we're now getting, you know, you're publishing a lot of that.
And I think the fact that you said that Iliade was an expat, he was an exile, as it were. There's a lot of other writers from the region who wrote like that. I think Borislav Pekic, I think you were going to mention that had written outside the homeland, as it were, but looking back.
My particular favourite of Pekic is called Zlatna Runa. I've read it in French, but it's not translated in English, but it would be called the Golden Fleece, and it's a seven volume work which goes back about 500 or 600 years, and it's about an Aramanian family who have Serbian nationality, and Aramanians being this nomadic people who speak their own language. And they're generally, if they're not shepherds, they're nomads. They're merchants. They have a strong sort of mercantilist streak in them, and it's about that, and through this book you get the the first volume begins at Christmas 1941 as the German army is about to invade, and you've got the two parts of the family, the Orthodox part of the family and the Roman Catholic part of the family, who celebrate Christmas at two different times.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting there, and there's the patriarch of the family sitting in his chair, and sort of people who's sort of falling asleep, and the other members of the family are sort of coming out, and they all want something from him, you know. but you've got all the generations there, and they all have a different view of it. But that is a book, and then it goes back. It goes back to the beginnings of the family, 500 or 600 years ago, and you have these awful scenes of people being impaled by the Ottomans.
It's a bit of a running theme, isn't it? Yes, it's very violent.
But it is a very violent region.
It always strikes me because it's a crossroads, because of military intervention. It is a crossroads,
and people have taken possession of it, you know, for long periods of time. So a lot of Andrich's short stories, and they're very nostalgic, and he's going
Andrich,
back
yes.
because he I think he had Bosnian nationality.
But he
wrote in Serb. And he was an ambassador.
He was a real mixture.
One of his stories is about the Jewish cemetery, and of course these are littered all over the Balkans.
Yes,
you know, and again the Jews have suffered the same persecution they did there that they did everywhere else.
Yes.
It goes back further than the Second World War.
Yes,
you know, and there are these huge cemeteries full of Jews. And he's another one who goes back to places and all stuff, and the sense of time is sort of suspended.
Mm.
You know, as we were talking about that Eliade story, Tsiganch at the Gypsy House, where
yes.
you're never really sure. It starts with an old man on the bus, and it seems to be in sort of Bucharest between the two wars.
Mm.
He seems to be a piano teacher, but then as we were, you lose thread of time there very quickly, and he goes into this Gypsy House, which is a brothel, and immediately he falls under the influence of the young women who are working there, so there he's being taken back to his youth, and they're talking to him about his youth,
yes,
you know, and because you know they obviously want to make him stay longer and earn more money, but then he starts asking for a particular girl, and then it transpires later in the story that he's talking about his fiancée or his girlfriend who never worked in a brothel, and they can't work out what he's talking. So all this it's
the time and memory, and also, it's
all getting mixed up. And
we also mentioned the old man and the bureaucrats, where
yes.
the same thing happens, and you know, there's a woman who appears. Sometimes she's old, sometimes she's very young, sometimes she's middle-aged, depending on who's seeing her. But I wonder if this issue with time is to do with this idea that history repeats itself. I know certainly Bosnians often say this. Oh, every 50 years we have a war.
Yes,
and it goes round. I know.
In their case, that's true.
Yes.
You can see why they would feel that, but history does repeat itself
yes.
there. But the West, as we come back, the West doesn't seem to grasp that. They don't seem to understand that there are going to be tensions between these very mixed communities, where territory has changed hands hundreds of times.
Mm, mm.
You know, and at one point it was under the Ottoman Empire, and then it was. And then it was Christian, and then there are the Jews everywhere, and then there's the Roman Catholic.
Yes, it's a fascinating mix.
It's fascinating to look at it from the outside.
Yes, maybe.
And try and understand
yes.
it, but living there, I mean, I know you have a house there, but I mean, I think it's not an easy place to live.
No, indeed. In fact, a lot of people, think as does the character in this story about how to get out. In
yes.
actual fact,
yes.
And I was in Albania this summer, and it was a kind of general theme. You know, how do we get out?
How do we get out?
Yeah, exactly,
yes.
exactly. I just want to come back a little bit before we end to the actual language. I mean, you've been translating this from Romanian. Can you tell us a little bit about the language and your relationship with it and how you found working with this Romanian, which is, in fact, from the 1920s, right? So a little
yes,
bit dated.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I've read a lot of Eliade's work, and my favourite is a book called Noas Prezeci Trandifia, 19 Roses, which again is about people going back, somebody looking for his father.
Mm.
He comes into somebody's house one day, knocks on the door and says, "Can I see Dr. So-and-so?" And it transpires he's looking for his father.
Uh-huh.
But I think this is set in communist Romania, but... I found the language in Diary of a Short-Sighted Adolescent, I mean, very similar to the language in his later work. I mean, it's simpler, certainly, and he's, in terms of the dialogue, it's sort of, you know, boys of 16, 17, 18 talking, so you're going to get that sort of
slang and
slang and bravado and the sort of camaraderie, but it's quite simple. It's very sparing and but very elegant. And you know he handles dialogue extremely well. Because there is a lot of dialogue, very little action. He would probably make a very good play.
Because it's dynamic in that way, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's moved on by the dialogue, and each chapter seems to be like an entry in a diary. Mm-hmm. You know, because there is overlap, and there is a sort of a narrative drive carrying it forward. But on the other hand, you know, he's dealing with a different subject.
Yes.
Each time, and you know, each chapter has a name, for instance. Mm-hmm. Which is not that common, certainly not nowadays. I mean,
true. But you've got
exactly. So you have, you know, there's the one about his diary, one about his attic, another about the school dramatic society. So that focuses on. So that's what this chapter is going to be about.
Mm.
So although there is a moving narrative, which is I suppose why it's a good idea to call it a diary, not a novel.
Yes, indeed. Because in fact, in the original, it's called the novel.
It's called the novel, and he spends a lot of time in the book saying how he's going to turn his diary into a novel.
And yet, it kind of remains as a diary.
And yet, it remains a diary. And he says at one point, he says, "Well, actually, it's I've got to write this novel like a diary, because that's how I convey." That's how I convey what I'm trying to say.
Yes, indeed.
It's a very mature piece of work.
How old was Iliade when he must have written?
Same age as about 17.
Same age as the character himself.
Same age as the character in the book.
Yeah. So that's fascinating, isn't it?
So it says for a 17-year-old, you know. Yes.
Well, that's very interesting, and I'm sure many, many people are looking forward to this book because it is probably one of the few Iliade fictional works which is in English and published in the UK. So thank you very much for all your hard work on it, Christopher.
Okay.
Nice to speak to you.
And you too.